In the progressive and liberal church, we avoid the blood of Christ like the plague. I'm going to play with that idea. We avoid blood like the plague. I want you to think about why blood grosses you out for a second. Because we're kind of grossed out by blood, right? Like it's, but why? I want to argue that there's some particular reasons for it. Go ahead, what are you thinking? It's associated with death, with pain. I want to give you some very particular American reasons that we might be grossed out by blood, though. Because often blood is not just associated with death and suffering, it's also associated with contamination. I want you to think about the ways that the AIDS crisis in the United States has affected how we think about blood, how we talk about blood, our anxiety about blood, and specifically about the idea of contamination with the blood of another person. Now, that's not the only place that we get images of contamination connected to blood. In fact, even in our own scriptures, there are histories of anxiety about contamination from who that bleeds. Women. Women going through menses need to be separated because they could contaminate and defile the people, right? Which is an act of patriarchal control over women. Because if they are agents of contamination, then surely they cannot always be in leadership. Surely they cannot always be powerful. They cannot always teach and preach and lead because they might contaminate. So, you know, they can do it for a minute, but, you know, you gotta take a break. Not because we care about you, but because we are afraid of you. I want you to think about another idea that's very American, particularly American, uniquely American, disgustingly American, which is the one drop rule about blood. The one drop rule suggests that if you have but one drop of blood of African ancestry, you are black. That is an American concept. That concept exists nowhere else in the United States, but it is shot through our cultural understandings of what it means to be black in this country. That if you have any ancestry that is black, you are black. Therefore, not allowed to be white. Talk about ideas of contamination that are directly connected to ideas of access to power, resources, and respect. I will argue that in the American context, the idea of suffering and violence could even be secondary to our relationships to blood, and that primary could actually be subconscious understandings of contamination, of impurity. Now, I know that might be a radical argument, and you can argue with me all you want about it. I would love it. Let's argue about blood. But I just want to throw it out there that perhaps what happens when we take on this contamination understanding is that we subconsciously distance ourselves from suffering, because one who is bleeding, who is suffering, could contaminate us. And so we walk on the other side of the road. I am suggesting that these concepts are particularly American, that they are particular to the context that we live in, and they are very specifically historical, and that many times they are created in order to divide us one from the other, that they are as much cultural as they are scientific. Because in Hebrew theology, blood is a very different concept. Now, certainly there are ideas of contamination, but if you look in the Hebrew text where it talks about blood, it gives you a sense of what it means to Jesus to talk about blood. This is from Genesis chapter 9. Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. And just as I gave you the green plants, I give you everything. Only you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood. For your own lifeblood I will surely require a reckoning. From every animal I will require it, and from every human being, each one for the blood of another, I will require a reckoning for human life. Whoever sheds the blood of a human, by a human shall that person's blood be shed. For in his own image God made humankind. Now there's a lot of complexity in that text, but what it's saying is that blood is the life of a being. And life belongs to God. Not you. That we must be reverent for blood is the property of God, for blood is itself the life force energy of a being. And while you might eat the body of an animal, you do not own their life. Their life actually belongs to God, which is an invitation for reverence when one eats animals. To remember that the life of that animal is a gift from God. See, Jesus is steeped in this thinking about blood, that blood is the property of God and it belongs to God. And the other piece that's important in the Genesis text is that your blood belongs to God, and that anyone who would shed your blood in violence has violated God's own self, for you were made in the image of God. So in the theology of the blood is a theology of nonviolence inherently. Now this gets ritualized later, right? In Leviticus chapter 17, we get another statement of the same concept, but it moves a little bit because Leviticus is interesting in establishing the priestly order. How shall we worship God? And this is from Leviticus chapter 17, verse 11. For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you for making atonement or reparations or payment for your lives on the altar. For as life, it is the blood that makes atonement. Therefore, I have said to you and the people of Israel, no person among you shall eat blood, etc., etc., etc. So what's happening on the altar in prayer, in sacrifice to God, is that the blood of the animals, i.e. the life of all things that we depend on, is being dedicated to the Lord. That no one can claim to own life or be the master of life, for God is the master of life. Now it gets complicated when Christians start talking about this stuff, right? Like, this is uncomfortable to us, right? And probably it's uncomfortable to us because we're familiar with this concept of sacrificial atonement, where Jesus had to be murdered and God foreordained it so that his blood would be spilled so that everybody would be saved and we'd all get washed in the blood of Jesus, etc., etc., etc. But what I want to offer is that's taking out of context the meaning of the ritual sacrifice. The point was not to kill the animal. The point was that if you're going to eat animals, you have to honor the life of that animal that belongs to God. Now, I will argue that atonement theology completely misses the point of the blood, because the point of the blood is that the blood belongs to God, not to people. So how shall we make sense of the blood of the Lamb? How shall we make sense of the blood of Christ? Well, first and foremost, we have to remember whose cross? Empire's cross. Who's responsible for the blood of Christ? Empire is responsible for blood of Christ. And on whose head should that price be exacted? On Empire's head. For all those, I'll read it again from Genesis 9. Whoever sheds the blood of a human, by a human shall that person's blood be shed. For in his own image God made humankind. Except that is so not the message of Christ. That his blood was given freely, not taken. Why is that important? from this theological perspective, it isn't important because we are not called to then go for and bleed empire. We are not called to be soldiers of violence on behalf of Jesus to fight empire. Because what happens every time an empire is toppled and torn down? A new one is built. In fact, it doesn't really get torn down. It's like it's a shadow box, and this character gets pulled out, and this character gets pulled out, and we put our own person here and our own person there, and we leave the basic structure intact. That across the world, if you look at the history of colonization of various parts of the world, all they did was just built a bunch of these little empire temples everywhere. And then when revolution came, oftentimes that didn't get taken apart. In fact, every violent revolution has really just repopulated the upper third and left everybody else in the same place. If we learn one thing from the book of Revelation, it's that we are absolutely not called to shed blood to repay for the blood of the Lamb. It is, in fact, the blood of the Lamb that we are to wash in. Now, if we can let go of the grossness of that metaphor for a second and just set it aside, what could it mean? What could it mean? Well, for one thing, it means that we are free of the obligation to retaliate. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. What does that mean? It's not yours. That we're not obligated, in fact, it is not our job, in fact, it is not our right to go out and extract vengeance, extract justice through harm. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. However, does that mean that we're just supposed to sit there and take it? Are we supposed to bleed too? No! Because he died one for all. How can we understand that? We can understand that to mean that his blood is the only blood that should be shed. There doesn't need to be more crucified people. There doesn't need to be more destruction by empire. We can be done with it. But how? But how? How could I even argue that we can be done with it? How many millions have been killed by empire? How many millions have fallen by the sword? How many millions have been exploited and worked unto death to produce value that moves up the pyramid? I will offer this, that being washed in the blood means identifying with the suffering of those who bleed. That our contamination theology is preventing us from crossing the road and helping the stranger who is beaten down in our streets on the way to Jericho. That all of our narratives in this country have been devised to divide us. That our narratives of contamination have convinced us that some blood is made in the image of God, and some blood used to be, and some blood is in part, but no longer. And the reality is that all blood is sacred and precious to God. And this is communicated to us by the blood of the Lamb. That I will argue that the suffering of Christ is the explicit demand that we care about bodies, that we care about life and life force energy. And also that we remember that vengeance is the Lord's. And that we are not called to seek out the lion who does justice and tears flesh from bone in the name of righteousness. We are called to follow the lamb who bleeds. That it is in following vulnerability that we find ourselves disentangled from the logic of violence and the logic of empire. But we have to wash in the blood, if you will. We have to be willing to stand in suffering with the suffering and identify with the suffering rather than identifying with the violence that produces the suffering. Because if we identify with the violence, we'll become agents of violence, we'll become agents of empire, and we will never get free. This is why we eat his body, and this is why we drink his blood, because we participate in his life and we witness to how they break bodies, how they spill blood in order to control, in order to take the place of God.